can have a seat. Well, hi, everyone. I am Matt. I am also one of the pastors here, and people always make fun of me for saying that, but it's true, and that's why I say it, and I also like agitating people. So, the Japanese have a term, karoshi, and it means death by overwork. This term actually emerged in the 90s when an increasing number of Japanese professionals were dying of like heart attacks and strokes at shockingly young ages, and it was tied to working just insane hours. The clinical term is occupational sudden mortality. Now, interestingly, as Americans, on average, we work 137 hours more per year than the Japanese. We work 260 more hours per year than the British. And we work 499 more hours per year than the French. Although I'm not sure that really counts. I'm kidding. We work more hours on average than any other country in the world. 37% of Americans work fewer or take fewer than 7 days of vacation a year. Workaholism, of course, is socially acceptable, along with its twin, busyness. We almost venerate these things, don't we? I mean, even while we suffer under their weight. For many, a 40-hour work week is a thing of the past. Working Monday through Friday is gone. Because of things now like cell phones and text and email and Slack and, oh my goodness, Zoom, your work follows you everywhere. We carry our work around with us in our front pocket. Of course, COVID blurred these lines even more. Turns out there is a dark side to working from home, and it's this: your work bleeds over into every hour of the day and night, and sometimes every day of the week. Before Thomas Edison and the light bulb, the average American slept 10 to 11 hours a night. It's like, no way. No, they didn't. They did. You read about John Wesley getting up at 4:30 in the morning to pray. It's like, wow, that's amazing and kind of intense. And then you realize he went to bed at like 6:30 the night before. It's like, okay, well, there you go. You fast forward to today. Everyone's busy. Literally, every person I talk to is busy. Teenagers are busy. College students, of course. Retired people, even babies. We're all crazy busy. Busy has become a badge of honor, a synonym for important. I'm busy. I'm important. Really, I matter. I do. If you're not busy, you don't feel you have value. The French philosopher Descartes had that famous phrase, I think, therefore I am, and we have slightly altered that to I work, therefore I am. Think about what we always ask kids. What do you want to be when you grow up? I bet when we ask that, we don't necessarily have in mind things like character or virtue. No, we're thinking about work, career. It's not a bad question, but I think it does betray the fact that we tend to be overly preoccupied with work. We speed up our life with hurry and overload just to cram it all in. And what we miss, often until it's too late, is the fact that busyness and overwork, it actually does something to our soul. It goes past your schedule. It even goes past your blood pressure to our, our inner self. Corey Ten Boom once said, if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. Ladies and gentlemen, is there a practice from the way of Jesus to mitigate, to heal us, body, mind, and soul, from our workaholism and from the busyness of life in the modern world? If you have been here the past few weeks, you know the answer. What is the answer? Sabbath, and you probably saw it on the slide. We are going to wrap this series up. If you have a Bible today, so if you have a Bible, turn to Genesis chapter 1. As I said, the first week, three times a year or so, because of our vision as a church, because of a new or renewed focus on like actually following Jesus, being disciples, Three times a year, we are going to do a 3 to 4 week in-depth study on a particular spiritual practice or discipline. And the reason for that is what I know about you, not because I've been spying on you, but because it's also true of me, is I can't just hear things one time and get it. I'm pretty sure that's actually backed up by science also. I can sometimes get my mind around something after hearing it once, but that's not enough usually to make me change or do something differently, especially not something as radical as practicing Sabbath in 2021. So week one on the Sabbath was fun, was an intro, and hopefully some of you left going, that's interesting. Week two, last week, I really challenged you with some practical steps to begin implementing Sabbath in your own lives and in your homes, and it's tempting to stop there, but I suspect, again, if you're like me, many of us were going, okay, now I'm considering it, right? Maybe a few of you went home and actually talked about what this would look like in your life. Perhaps a few of you took me up on this and you tried it. So today, though, I want to cover a few more aspects of this, and really, I hope this soaks into your bones, that the repetition and coming at this from different angles, that all of us would respond to this invitation, that we'd have the boldness and the courage to incorporate Sabbath into our weekly rhythm. Genesis 1, verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Skip down to verse 31. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Continuing on, Genesis 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God, in the story, rested. Let me say that again. God rested. Yeah, but you don't remember what it was like to have, like, little kids. God rested. Yeah, but you're not like one of those executive types with a really demanding job. God rested. Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, I'm, like, more of a doer. You know what I mean? And like, plus I'm not into like legalism and this stuff. God rested. After 6 days of creation, you think you had a productive work week? God said, okay, now it's time to rest. The word rest here is the Hebrew word Shabbat, where we get our word Sabbath, and it simply means to stop, rest, to cease, to finish. Now, the idea here is not that God was like tired or burnt out. That's not it. It's more like that feeling when, if you have a yard, and those early days of spring, that, like when you spend a Saturday out doing work in your yard, you mow and you trim and you weed and you spread mulch and you plant flowers, and then for some reason it snows in the middle of April. No. And you get to the end of the day and the sun is shining and you take a quick shower and you sit down in your backyard with your beverage of choice and you just go, ah. You delight in all that you've done. Just look around. You delight in your work. That's the idea behind Sabbath. It is very good. In fact, the word itself can be translated to delight. It's the kind of rest that's a party. It's a peaceful, joyful celebration. That's what Sabbath is. A whole day to stop and to follow, to set aside, to follow God's example, to stop and rest and delight in the world, in your life, in it, and above all, in God himself. As I pointed out a few weeks ago, humanity was made on day 6 of creation. Day 7 was a day in which God, Adam and Eve, the whole garden, everything ceased production and activity or effort. Which means Adam and Eve's, get this, first full day in existence was a day of rest. not work. Talk about a first impression, huh? Social scientists actually say that you form your first impression of people within 100 milliseconds of first meeting them. So yeah, first impressions matter. Imagine what Adam and Eve learned about God's generosity from their first impression of him on their first day. Their first knowledge of God and of the world God made was that rest was not an afterthought. It was of first importance. Dan Allender, in his book on Sabbath, said, "The Sabbath is an invitation to enter delight. The Sabbath, when experienced as God intended, is the best day of our lives. Without question or thought, it is the best day of the week. It is the day we anticipate on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and the day we remember on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Sabbath is the holy time where we feast, play, dance, have sex." Pretty sure he means with your spouse. "Sing, pray, laugh, tell stories, read, paint, walk, and watch creation in its fullness. Few people are willing to enter the Sabbath and sanctify it, to make it holy, because a day full of delight and joy is more than most people can bear in a lifetime, let alone a week." If you are new to the Sabbath, here's a great question to ask yourself to give shape to your practice. What could I do for 24 hours that would bring me deep joy? That would just cause me to exhale. It's very good. That would fill me with delight. For me, on the Sabbath, and this is going to look different for each of us, I don't check email, and it's on Saturdays is our day. I leave my laptop at the office. If you call me, unless you are my wife or my kids, I probably won't answer. It's sad, isn't it? In fact, half the time I don't even have my phone on me, which is weird because it still phantom vibrates in my pocket. I don't even have it. And also you're like, what if someone needs to get a hold of you? Well, then they have to come find me. Here's something about me. I dislike cell phones more than any person that I know. In fact, for all of the convenience and all the benefits, and it's very convenient, if I could magically push a button to take the whole world back to the time, not back to the phone in the kitchen with the long cord, I'm not a Neanderthal, okay? But to like the cordless phone, the 900 megahertz or whatever it was with the antenna. I mean, like, it's lightning and winds. Just imagine this. And you guys are going, no. Click. And you'd all be mad at me. But then the sun would come out. You know, at the end of like post-apocalyptic movies where there's like new life and it's still. And then you'd be free. Anyway, I'd push it. I lost where I was for a second. And the phone thing, I covered that. I'm with my family. I take time to, sometimes I'll ride my mountain bike or my motorcycle. I really enjoy cooking. That's actually restful for me on the Sabbath. I don't read for work. I'll read a novel or something like that. A lot of times at night, we will watch a movie as a family. And it's getting better because our kids are getting older, and so they watch stuff now that I can kind of get into. I always try to get us to watch Goonies, and they say they've seen it too many times, and I say, that's impossible. A few weeks ago, I suggested we watch the 1994 film, somewhere around there, Dances with Wolves. It's a great movie. I had to fast forward a few parts, but let me tell you, if you haven't seen that or haven't seen it in a long time, it's more of a downer than I remember. In the end, the horse dies, it gets shot, the wolf gets shot. I mean, at one point, Claire's like, why are we watching this? And I was like, I'm so sorry, I remember it anyway. My point is, for me, Sabbath, it's like a weekly Christmas without all the stress and the weird relatives. almost always, it is the best day of the week for me. It's the day that I feel most connected to my wife, my kids, most connected to God, my own soul. It's the day that I feel most at peace. It's the day that really sets the tone for my entire week. Notice three things from Genesis 1 and 2. Number 1, the Sabbath is built into the rhythm of creation. God worked for 6 days and rested, and in so doing, he established a rhythm in the fabric of creation. It is not a coincidence that every single society, people on earth, has established a 7-day week, not just the Judeo-Christian framed society of the West. Again, though, we live in a world without rhythm, partly because of things like the light bulb and the clock, and we have mantras that don't help, like, you only live once, so you have to do it all. And again, the cell phone. I mean, all of this has conspired to create a world where you just go, 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 and you never stop, and you never Sabbath, and we call it hustle. Good job. Listen, you're not a machine. You are a human being. I don't know if you know this, but you have a soul. For want of rest, our lives are in danger. You were not made to go 24/7. You were made to tap into the rhythm of how the world was created itself. There's a law in the fabric of the universe of work and then rest. It just is. H.H. Farmer said, if you go against the grain of the universe, you will get splinters. Now, on the positive side of this, this rhythm that we can choose to acknowledge, history has it that the pioneers who kept the Sabbath on the Oregon Trail, they actually made it there earlier than those who didn't. People like Nicole. More recently, does anybody play this, the original version? Man, amazing. More recently, there was a scientific study on Seventh-day Adventists, and it's actually a Christian denomination, one of the few that is built around the practice of Sabbath. And they found that not only are they happier than like Americans in general and Christians specifically, but they actually live, on average, 11 years longer than the rest of us. One doctor pointed out that if you count up all the time devoted to Sabbath over the course of an average lifespan here, it's, guess how many years it is? 11. And his hypothesis was that for every day you Sabbath, you literally get that day added back to your life. On the negative side, when you go against the grain of the universe, when you don't Sabbath and you don't stop and you just go, you suffer the consequences, burnout, anxiety, a lousy immune system, high blood pressure, feeling disconnected from God and your soul and others. You can't fight the Sabbath rhythm any more than you can fight gravity. It just is. Wayne Mueller, in his book on Sabbath, says, when we neglect Sabbath, illness and crisis become our Sabbath. I am ashamed to admit this, but for probably the first 5, maybe 6 years of this church, when we started, I rarely took a day off. Had all the work of starting a church, and we had 2 little kids, and limited staff, and I was doing seminary at the time. It wasn't a good idea, although I'm glad I did it. And this is just one of the things that I've had to work through just with my own counselor about my own need to feel important or inability to say no or whatever. Here's my fantasy. You ready for this? I don't know what you fantasize about, but here's my fantasy during a lot of those years. Maybe if I could get sick, not like super sick, just enough to go to the hospital. Or maybe I get like hurt somehow, not like really bad, but just enough to spend a few days in the hospital and then I could rest, which is crazy. If you've ever been to the hospital, it's actually not a very restful place. and then I could say no to these things or have my calendar cleared or whatever. Yeah. The Sabbath, it just is. When you go against that, you go against the grain of the universe. By the way, this weekly rhythm it does stand in pretty stark contrast to the rhythm of the world around us. Pete Scazzaro, in his book on emotionally healthy leadership, he illustrates it this way, and I was going to work too late to make a chart, but I just copied the page instead, so anyway. The secular rhythm, the typical way the world works is, if you can see it, work, 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 vacation! Work, 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 vacation, I made it. And by the way, in those years when I was doing that, without fail, my first day of vacation, guess what happened? I'd get a sore throat or I'd get a cold. Day one, I mean, it was like clockwork. In contrast, God's rhythm looks like this. Sabbath, work, 6 days even. Sabbath, work, Sabbath, work. It's a completely different rhythm. Number two, the Sabbath is blessed. Genesis 2:3 says, then God blessed the seventh day. Did you know in Genesis 1 and 2, God actually blesses three things? He blesses animals, he blesses people, and then he blesses Sabbath, a day. Now, with the first two, the blessing, in a sense, it's a life-giving blessing to procreate. And so God says to the animals, be fruitful and increase in number. He says to humans, be fruitful and increase in number. And by the way, we have had, and Jeremy alluded to this, but I can tell you the actual number. In the past year, 16 babies born here at Commonway. Not here, here, literally. And don't do that. So well done. Good job. That's the blessing. And then, my point, God blessed the Sabbath, a day. What does that mean? It means the Sabbath, just like with animals and human beings, has a life-giving ability to fill your soul and the world up with more life. I mean, life is tiring, isn't it? No matter how much you love your job, and I love mine, by the end of the week, I am done. I'm tired, I'm worn out, I'm irritable, ask my family, right? Rest refills you with creativity, vision, energy, optimism, peace, hope, and clarity. Sabbath rest is life-giving. Why? Because this is actually more than just a day. It is a blessed day. Number three, the Sabbath is holy. Genesis 2:3 says, he blessed the seventh day and made it holy. The rabbis talk about the principle of first mention. And you can debate its role in biblical interpretation and all that, but the idea is this, that the first time when you come across in the library of Scripture a word or an idea or a subject or whatever, that first instance mention is essentially a definition. Did you know the first time the word holy shows up in the entire Bible is here, tied to a day, to time. You're not an ancient Mesopotamian? Me neither. But what would have stood out to the original readers is the fact that in the ancient Near East, the gods and goddesses were always tied to space, not time. They are always linked to a particular location, like a mountain or, you know, a shrine or some ziggurat or someplace high up and therefore closer to the gods or whatever. This God doesn't do that. God makes a holy day. Abraham Joshua Heschel said, the Sabbaths are our great cathedrals. He called the seventh day architecture in time. Because for this God, the one true creator, the entire cosmos is his temple. In other words, don't shrink him down to like a ziggurat in a desert. Meaning, if you want to experience God, you don't have to travel to the other side of the world. All you need to do is stop. He's found right here. All you need to do is enter a day that is blessed and holy. Turn to Exodus 20, if you would. I want to revisit the Ten Commandments, starting in verse 8, which is the fourth commandment. God says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. So, notice, it is holy. Keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. That is a whole other teaching, isn't it? 6 days labor and do. Some of you need to hear that one. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Notice three more things as we kind of develop this theology of Sabbath. Number four, the Sabbath is not the same as a day off. Did you pick up on that? Notice the refrain, to the Lord. The adjective, again and again, holy, meaning set apart, special. I think we get the concept, all of us, of a day off. What's a day off? When essentially we do, a day when we don't work for our employer, in theory. But we still work. We still run errands and do laundry and shopping and planning and, you know, pay the bills and all of that. A day off is a day for many of us when we work, just all the work that we don't get paid to do. Eugene Peterson called this day a bastard Sabbath. Definitely never said that in church before. He called it the illegitimate child of the seventh day in American culture. The Sabbath is not a day off. It's not a day we do all the work we don't get paid for. I mean, some of you, you come to the end of Sunday exhausted. You get to the end of the weekend and just exhausted. And that doesn't mean it was a bad day or a bad weekend. It just means it wasn't Sabbath. I mean, the thing is, we get how to worship at church. We get how to shop. We get how to play. All of us get how to consume entertainment. Very few of us know how to rest. We actually confuse relaxation with restoration. Think of TV. The average American, watches 5 hours of TV a day. This is staggering to me. How many of you get done binge watching whatever your show is and think, man, I just feel so alive in my soul right now. I feel so much clarity around the season of my life and what I should focus on. I have this better sense of who I am, and my creativity is just flowing right now. How many of you say, I feel so free? I feel so content in my body. Right? I don't feel lustful or greedy. I just feel so full of God's joy. Now, most of us just escape for a few hours, and then we come back to our same old problems, half the time without getting enough sleep the night before. The Sabbath is a holy day, a day to the Lord. Better translation, a day that is set apart and dedicated to God. And so when I Sabbath, I just run everything through the grid of, is this rest? Is this worship? And if the answer is yes, then I enjoy it guilt-free. If the answer is, or I find myself going, I mean, it kind of, sort of, I mean, I can, this time I can, then I don't do that. Because there are literally 6 other days for that stuff. By the way, when I say worship, I don't mean that all you do is listen to Bethel worship songs for 24 hours and study the Bible and pray. By worship, I mean you intentionally feed your soul with beauty in order to prompt spontaneous awe and wonder and gratitude and joy in God's presence. There is a way of curating beauty that will lead you to a whole life of worship. So come to church, sing, pray, study the Bible, but expand your list of disciplines to include eating, taking a nap, walking, playing a board game with your kids. I mean, whatever it is that will make you break out in spontaneous worship of God. Number 5, notice the Sabbath is both a command and a gift. It's a command, like, remember the Sabbath, and it's a gift. I've given it to you. It's for you. It's a gift. It's for your kids. It's fascinating. If you were to break the Ten Commandments down according to length, the Sabbath is by far the longest. It takes up roughly actually exactly, 37% of the 10. It's just one of them. Theologians point out that the Sabbath is number 4 in the commandments, and that it's kind of the bridge between the first 3, which are all about our relationship with God, and then it links to the last 6, which are all about our relationship with our neighbor. That it's the way that we live in love toward God and neighbor. And again, it's the only practice, spiritual discipline, that's commanded in the 10. Think about all the spiritual disciplines God could have put there. One made the list. You could argue that the 10 commandments are basically like bare minimum reality. There's other stuff you could do that's good or not do that's bad. It's like the bare minimum morality. And again, one practice made that list. Bare minimum, not prayer, not silence and solitude, not even scripture, but Sabbath. I want to revisit this debate. Do followers of Jesus have to keep the Sabbath? Is it part of the New Testament covenant, in other words? Is it still binding on us today? And to be honest with you, many scholars, if not most, say no. They point out, rightfully so, that there is no command in the New Testament to practice Sabbath. Paul never commands it, neither does Jesus. Now, we do have the Lord's Day, and there are some commands about worshiping and gathering around that. And there's also the idea in Hebrews 4 about this spirit of restfulness that we are to live in every day of the week because of Christ's work on the cross. But all that said, I disagree. Number one, I would argue that it's part of the Ten Commandments. By the way, it's the only one of the 10 that we regularly and shamelessly brag about not keeping. I find that odd. We don't do that with any of the other. Murder, by the way, isn't cool now, even though we're like New Testament people, okay? Number two, Jesus practiced Sabbath. He never broke it. He broke the Mishnah, which is the Jewish teaching on the Hebrew law and scriptures. But he never said anything to null the Sabbath. In fact, he said it's a gift, which I've already told you. It's Sabbath was made for people. And then finally, number three, it's the one command that's rooted in the Genesis story. Remember the Sabbath. Why? Because in 6 days, God created the world, and then he created day 7 and blessed it. So I think it's kind of a pointless debate. And I get our objections. I get our pushback. By the way, our one theological objection is legalism. And I understand that. I've seen that, experienced that around this particular topic, and maybe you have too. But could I be so bold as to suggest that for most of us here, legalism is not that's not really our biggest problem. It's our smokescreen. And if it is your problem, then don't do that. Don't make it legalistic. Okay? All right, I'm glad we had this talk. Again, it stands as a rhythm. Fighting about whether or not we have to keep the Sabbath is like fighting about whether we have to keep the law of gravity. Good luck with that. I love how the Sabbath is a command, but remember, it's a gift also. The Lord has given you this day. I mean, do we have to enjoy it? I think we're missing the point, right? I want to. Finally, the Sabbath is a day we remember. In 1991, a guy goes to a flea market and he sees a picture frame that he likes and he buys it and takes it home. Once he got home, he discovered that behind the frame or in the back was this weird old document. And for some reason, he didn't really think much about it. 2 years goes by. A friend sees the document and is like, hey, we should look into that. And as the rest is history. This $4 frame was concealing a first edition copy of the Declaration of Independence that reportedly was worth well north of $1 million. So what are you saying, Matt, that I should go to flea markets more? No. I'm saying we don't realize what we have. right now, what we've been given. As modern Christians, we have an acute case of Sabbath amnesia. So the rabbis, they actually called someone who neglected Sabbath, they called him a tenek shenishba. Translated, it means the child who was captured. Because they thought, what kind of a Jew could be so oblivious to the Sabbath? And here's their conclusion. Only a Jew who had suffered extreme cultural dislocation. Only a Jew, in fact, who had been kidnapped as a child and raised by non-Jews. For Jews, forgetting the Sabbath was the same as forgetting one's entire identity. As Christians, yes, we are going to enter into Sabbath in a unique way, and there's all kinds of freedom. But to remember Sabbath is to remember who we are. Children, born of the grace and mercy of Jesus. To keep a Sabbath is to give time and space on your calendar for the grace of God. We have to remember because we are all prone to forget. By the way, remember, that doesn't mean recall in your mind information for a test. It means to call into reality, to recall a reality that gives shape to your behavior in the present, right now. To remember that there is a creator, that this universe is not the product of blind chance. It's the result of a brilliant mind. To remember that rest is a gift to receive. So to recap all six, the Sabbath is built into the rhythm of creation. The Sabbath is blessed. The Sabbath is holy. You want to experience God, you don't have to travel, you don't have to go to a cathedral, you just need to slow down and rest. The Sabbath is not the same as a day off. It's not just for rest, but for worship. The Sabbath is both a command and, more importantly, a gift. And it's a day we remember. In our 24/7 world, the Sabbath will not just happen. It is a deliberate, intentional, sometimes costly, completely countercultural practice. If you just let this happen to you, if you just kind of let it happen, maybe it will, maybe it won't, spontaneously. More often than not, it will devolve into what Peterson called a bastard Sabbath. To Sabbath well, ironically, requires a little bit of work. That's what I want us to think about. It's ironic because that's what we're trying to get away from, right? Three times in the New Testament, it talks about the preparation day. That is the day in Jewish practice before the Sabbath to get ready for the Sabbath. I was telling Jeremy about this, and he mentioned the film Fiddler on the Roof. And he's telling me about this scene, and I'd never seen it. I said, are you trying to trick me into, is there singing in this, first of all? And I'm just kidding, I love musicals. But he described this scene where, I don't know their names because I haven't seen it, but they're in the house, and they're trying to get ready for dinner, and they're running around, and guests are coming over, and like the father's like, the sun's going down, the sun, hurry, 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 get ready for the Sabbath. And there's all this frenetic activity, and then they sit down, and they do their song or their prayer, whatever, to begin, and it's just like this calm moment, like this hush. This stillness, like we have, it's begun. And then I watched that clip on YouTube, and I was going to show it to you, but it was boring, so anyway, I didn't. But anyway, I'm sure it's good in context. There's not a good drop in. He's back there like, I'm going to kill you. Okay. The preparation day. You do all the cooking or the planning or the inbox zero or the running around, the shopping. You do all of that stuff, whatever it takes, that whatever you have to get done, in order to actually delight on the Sabbath, to take a full 24-hour period to rest. That doesn't mean you have to get it all done. In fact, that's one of the traps we fall into. When I get it all finished, then I'll rest. When does it end? There's always more work to be done. What's nice about the Jewish Sabbath, and you're free to not do this, but it begins Friday night at sundown. Guess what you don't control? Last I checked, the sunset, right? And the time, it actually changes. It's out of our control. It teaches us that we're done, not when we're done, but when the time is up. We run out of time. Your work is never done. It's just, isn't that like an adult life? It's just like due. You just get, my sermon's never done. I just run out of time. Careful. I just want to say, I think a big part of our objection, I think it's actually hard to argue with all of this the past 3 weeks. I think there are some of you here who go, okay, that's pretty convincing, and I can see the benefit, and that does sound nice, but I can't do it in this season of my life. I'll do it in the next season, when the kids are a little older, when I graduate, when I get a different job, when my spouse and I have the same day. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and I'm just saying, I get that there are extenuating circumstances, but from my own experience, life has a way of going from just one, when this season ends, to when this season ends, and it's just when, and it's a terrible way to live. One of the things Sabbath teaches us is there comes a day when you just have to let it be done. One of the beautiful things about Sabbath is you take this day off, and guess what happens? Not day off, by the way. The universe gets on fine without you. It's actually quite offensive, really. The Sabbath is an act of trust in God. We let go of our illusion of control. We give it to God. You can talk all you want about how God is sovereign, in control. Sabbath is how we practice the sovereignty of God. Not just believe in our head, but embody in our body, our homes, our families, our work, our schedules, everything. To trust that there is a God and I'm not him. It's a weekly reminder that my identity is not out there. It's in here from God. That my identity is not what I do, whether or not I killed it at work this week, what other people think, what I drive or own, or whatever. The Sabbath is a weekly reminder that I am who I'm loved by. I love the old African proverb, truth is but a rumor until it lives in our bones. We start by trying, by engaging. We start here and now. The problem, the need is not for more education or more information on this. We begin to try it out, to experience it. We actually begin to change and experience transformation as we do what God has invited us into. A word here quickly to families, those of you with kids at home. The time is now. Not only is there incredible benefit for the life and the culture of your family to being fully present this one day, enjoying life. I mean, time goes so fast. Everybody who's, if you're a new parent, everybody tells you, don't they? And it's true. You have an opportunity to pass on an emotional and spiritual heritage to your kids. It's about you. Discipling, modeling the way of Jesus at home. You want to know why a lot of kids who walk away from the church do so? Because they see a disconnect between what is talked about at church and the way their parents actually live when they're not being watched. It's called hypocrisy, by the way. You want to model a faith that actually means something to you? Yes, live with integrity. And yes, talk about Jesus. But one of the most concrete and I think significant things that we can do as parents is to do this. In this culture, that's crazy. By the way, your kids will love it. They'll look forward to that day. The time is now. And if you don't have kids, you know, wherever you are, whatever your stage or season of life, your personality, there's tons of room for this. But now. We do have a handout. If you have kids downstairs, we're going to give this to you when you pick them up. And if you have teenagers on our email list. You'll get this by email. And there are also copies of this at the Connection Center in the lobby. Just ways to begin, just to help us think about how we could start. So take this and take some ideas, try them out, experiment, adapt them according to the stage and age of your kids. But we're trying to give you something to help empower you to take this beyond Sunday. Last thought is this. Here's the good news. We're not asking you to do more. Can you receive that? In fact, we're asking you to do less. This is not about addition. It's about subtraction. We're not asking you to add the practice of Sabbath to your already overly busy life. We're asking you to simply slow down to enjoy your life with Jesus and his community. Isaiah 58, God says, if you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land, to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Would you stand with me and we'll pray? Lord, thank you for this command and this gift. Lord, would you give each one of us here the wisdom, the clarity to know, what does practicing Sabbath look like for me in this season, in this stage? God, help us to be brutally honest about what's keeping us from this. That many times the real reason is different than the excuses that we give. So give us courage. Lord, I pray that as we, in an act of faith, for some of us, it's full on faith, to step out and to stop and rest and delight once a week. As we begin experimenting with this, Lord, give us a sense of freedom and joy to figure this out. But Lord, my prayer is months from now, a year from now, we're all going to have weeks that don't go well and just kind of crash and burn, but that we're going to stay on this path. And that months from now or at some point in the future, that so many of us in this room will be able to say, I didn't know what I was missing. If I could go back, I would have done it so much earlier. That for many of us, it would be the one thing in our week that we're absolutely committed to. Because of the life and the joy and the delight that we get to experience. So we wouldn't trade it for anything. Give us your grace and strength. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Everyone got it? Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
San Diego.